sinker and a line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, hey there, boys and girls. How's everybody doing out there today? You know, be careful what you wish for. I had a couple people say, you know, boy, we'd like you to go back on the radio. And then you hear me and you're like, why did I want this guy back?
And you know, when we were gone last week, you and I did some major screw up and didn't get on the air. And, you know, and the rumors
that was just straight out me.
Okay.
You were here. You were ready to do your job. I screwed up. I think it's the first time I've ever done that.
At least the first time, yeah.
Yeah. And I lost track of time, and all of a sudden it's 10 minutes before the show. I'm still 40 minutes away.
Yeah, right. So that was the end of that deal.
I'm getting calls going, you're not at the show? I'm like, no, I'm actually still at work.
And
I'm like,
yeah, right, right. Well, you know, the rumors that Frank and I had been eaten by old Hitler while we were fishing for tarpon are not true.
Mostly not true.
Yeah.
Might have lost a toe.
Yeah.
So, there's just been a lot of stuff going around, and we're having actually a very good season on fishing right now. A lot of fish being caught. We're getting stories from guys going out and they're out for, you know, 4 or 5 hours and catch 20 redfish. Guys are catching big numbers of big snook and little snook and trout here and trout there. They're catching mackerel. They're catching tarpon. I mean, there's fish biting all over the place. One of the best years we've had on cobia in the last 20, 25 years.
It's an amazing amount of cobia that are out there.
And, you know, it's just funny because there's a guy on the internet, Rick Rule. Now, Rick Rule is an older guy, and he's all about how you do investments. He ran a big fund and stuff, but he's retired now for the most part. And I was listening to one of his things this morning, and I'm going to put it into fishing terms, but this is actually an idea from Rick Rule. What happened was, he says, you know, when, in my terminology, when fishing gets really good, nobody blames anybody.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
When fishing's really good, it's just the way it should be, the way God intended it to be, and this is where it is. But when fishing's bad, we're blaming tournaments. We're blaming commercial fishermen. We're blaming recreational fishermen. We're blaming the Pope. We're blaming everybody. There's got to be somebody to blame because things are bad. Now, we don't do that like this year when everything's good. A lot of fish around. It's just natural the way it was supposed to be. Now, this was his analogy with the stock market. That when it's way up and all the stocks are climbing, this is just the way God intended it, and it's supposed to be the normal. But as soon as it starts falling, it's not considered normal. There's got to be somebody to blame.
Right, 1,100 points yesterday.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah, that was one hell of a roller coaster ride. It started to climb up a little bit, and you know, I was doing a project, and then I said, "Whoa, I got to stop because you can't touch these stocks right now."
Yeah, I literally, you know, I'm 100% sure all that's manipulated because they just took Elon Musk out of the S&P.
Yes, they did. Wasn't that amazing?
I mean, for environmental reasons, but Exxon is still number 10 listed.
Yeah, right.
So this kind of goes along with my fishing theme, and I...
Oh, wait, yeah, this is a fishing show.
Yes, I understand. I mean, but whether it's the stock market, the political manipulation of corporations, or the availability of fish... We all, when things get bad, we look for somebody to blame. And that's where you want to be cautious. Because right now, FWC, in its infinite, can't get its head out of its rectum syndrome, is now looking at banning Kaylee hooks because they're to blame. Are you kidding me? You put a Kaylee hook under a bobber. A, they're inexpensive. B, that's what they modeled the circle hook after. It's almost exactly a circle hook. And fishing trout under a bobber, 99.5% of the time, it will catch the fish in the corner of the mouth. Once in a, good God, years, do I ever get a gut-hooked fish with one. It just almost never happens. Now, when you're a scientist working for FWC, you have to come up with something catastrophic. So what do? If you want to prove a hook is bad, you put a bait on it, you throw it out there, you give it a lot of slack line, leave the bail open, and let the fish swallow it and run around with it for a few minutes. Under no pressure, it goes right down in his stomach with the food. It's very simple to gut hook a fish. You just don't pay attention and don't care. Oh, wait a minute, who's that sound like? No, not FWC. They pay attention, they care, right? I think, yeah, that's got to be right. Anyway, if you don't want to gut hook a fish, you leave a little tension on the line. Most times, 80% of the time, fish hit or bite your hook in a kind of a swirling motion. They go to the left or to the right. I think most fish are right-handed, and when they hit, they kind of go to the right. But it may be the other way. I don't remember. I used to. They had done a study on that, and I don't remember what the outcome of the study was. Whether when fish hit, they turn to the left, or when fish hit, they turn to the right. But it's kind of like with people. Most are right-handed, and some are left-handed. And with fish, most, when they hit, let's say turn left, but I actually think it was right, and a few of them would turn the opposite way. Now, it's that turning motion that makes a circle hook work. It's also requires some tension on the line. That's why I like using the live liner reels. If I've got a piece of bait out and it's letting it sit, I can put just a bit of tension on there to keep it tight, so that the fish doesn't gut hook with it. It keeps it more in about his mouth, because as he hits and turns with it, it's that turning that puts that circle hook into the corner of his mouth and that. Now, if you just have a lot of slack line, that circle hook will go right down in his belly. A Kaylee hook will go in his belly. A J hook. It doesn't matter. They're eating the bait, swallowing it down. Having that tension on the line is the difference between hooking a fish in the mouth and hooking a fish in his gut. Now, a fish's mouth is not like yours. When you poke your lip, it hurts and it bleeds. Now, fish's mouth, they are actually designed to eat crabs. Freshwater fish eat crawdads regularly. Saltwater fish eat blue crabs. Ever pick up a blue crab? Picture stuffing that live into your mouth just for a second. What would that be like?
Ouch.
Yeah, I mean, that it don't even sound good. I mean,
no.
Forget being nasty. And my, you know, I got to tell you, my family, I come from a long line. I can trace my hereditary things back a long ways. I'm actually troglodyte. And, you know, we started with the fire thing. We were cooking our food. It's been a family tradition for, you know, close to a million years. So I still cook. I don't eat sushi. I just don't. I'm not New Age at all. It's one of the reasons I'm down to 2 days a week, too. When I say stuff, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, although sometimes I am. But you get sued over that now.
You do.
You can get sued for not calling the person they, them. Now, how do you get they, them when it's a single person? Both those are plural.
Yeah, I know those of us that went to Catholic school are having great difficulty with the pronoun problems now, because we know when you're supposed to use a pronoun and what it should be. They means that there's more than one of you.
Morris is sending me pictures. He's actually in the Bahamas. Uh-huh. That's that little music note you heard, the text message going off. And Morris is a bass fishing guy, and he just wrote, not bad for a bass fishing guy. He's got like 8-foot marlin or something
right
to the boat. He's got sailfish on. It's actually amazing. But he works for the ex-head of a bank, and the guy retired with billions. And Morris is their permanent captain whenever they're in town, and he's taken that boat. They have an 84-foot boat. But when they go to the Pacific, they put it on a freighter and run it through the Panama Canal, unload it in the Pacific, and then they fly Morris down to get on the boat and take them fishing and do everything. And when they want to bring it back, they load it on a freighter and have it sent back here. You know, this is the kind of family he works for. But he's sending me all these pictures of the monster fish he's catching. Fish are going off all over everywhere. It's a great year for fishing because unlike what you're going to hear in the media, unlike what you're hearing in the news, the truth is the water is cleaner than it was in the 70s. The air is theoretically cleaner than it was in the 70s. And things have gotten a lot better and they continue to get a bit better. But we don't know. We do know that 15,000 years ago, there was no glaciers, or 20,000 years ago. Then we had an ice age and made a lot of glaciers. And when the glaciers melt, the sea level came up 400 feet, by the way. But wait a minute. No, that can't be true because that was before people were here. There's just all kinds of stuff. You got to look at part of what you see and part of what you know out of history. And what we know out of history, the world can be a bad place. But I'm telling you, the world's not that bad. I mean, good years, bad years. Nobody blames anybody when we have a good year. Like this year, it's a great year to go fishing.
Yeah, and remember that it goes in cycles, too, that it's not always going to be the great year to go fishing. There's going to be years when it's going to be down, like it was about 10 years ago. Where
in 2000, it was some of the best fishing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
From 99 to 2002 were, to me, the best years I ever saw fishing, bar none. It was just crazy good. But that was coming off of a few years. You could fish for a month and never see a redfish.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go snook fishing night after night, and you would catch a few here and there. But it wasn't like you could go out at night and actually, you know, hook fish most of the time. It's just funny. Nobody remembers that it was bad before it got really good. And then it kind of tapered down for a while, and now it's tapering back up. Blame me for this. I'm the one to blame for all this good fishing, right?
It works for me.
Well, I mean, what the heck? If you're going to blame somebody when it gets bad.
Yeah, take credit where it isn't due.
Yeah, take credit where it isn't due. I'm not nothing to do with it. It's just, I'm just the one who's actually talking about things are not horrible. Mostly.
Right. And then,
mostly.
And then the idea is go out, go fishing. Go out and experience this. It's not going to last forever, but it's here. It's here right now. As we're on this radio speaking to you, there are thousands of fish out there waiting for you to come out and throw something in front of them.
And that's it. And if you go into some place and they tell you need $400 worth of stuff to go fishing, walk out the door. We sell rods and reel combos for $21, $22. That's for a reel and a rod with line on it. I would say if you want something a little better, you're looking at $26 to $30. But you can do it for $20.
Yeah.
Well, actually $25, you figure. But if you got a few bucks, you know, you don't spend a lot of money if you don't know you like it. But I will tell you, fishing is the best reason in the world to stand on a pier, look out over the water, and not have to do a darn thing. And if somebody calls you and they say, well, you know, can you do this or do that? You say, man, I'm sorry, I'm fishing right now. It's a great excuse not to have to jump and run and go do something.
And
I'm fishing.
And it's so much better than medication. And you know, your heart rate goes down, your breathing settles down, your depression levels disappear. Every now and then you get a shot of adrenaline when something yanks on the end of that line. It's all good stuff. Get out there and go fishing. There's no excuses now. I don't want to go out because there are no fish out there and it's hot.
What do you care if you catch fish or you don't catch fish?
Yeah.
You're having a nice time. You're in a great location. You're overlooking the water. Think of how many millions and billions of dollars people spend so they can go out and look at the water.
Right. Right. Exactly right.
So you live in this, you live in an apartment, you live in a little house somewhere, and you're, you know, 3 miles from the beach or 3 miles from a pier. So you get in the car, you go to a chain store, go to a tackle store, whatever, and buy an inexpensive rod and reel, tie a hook on the end of the line, put some weight. Now, when you're looking at a rod and reel to start fishing with, very few inexpensive combos come with braid. And that's okay. Believe it or not, braid did not come out till 10, 15 years ago. Before that, since the 1930s, monofilament was invented in the 1930s. Now, it did not really become usable until the 1950s. Before that, it was really stiff. It was almost like throwing wire line. But monofilament simply means one solid core plastic elongated out. Now, by the 60s, monofilament line was great. Everybody used it. We had other types of plastic line they used to call catgut, and it was nylon. And then you had nylon line, which was braided before braided, because they took thin nylon lines and braided it all together into kind of a flat, tiny rope. And there was, what's the one that started with a P?
I remember Dacron lines.
Dacron line. Yeah. That's it. P. See? Started with a P.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dacron. But you had Dacron, you had nylon, you had monofilament. You had a lot of different line choices. And what I love doing, and I absolutely just get the biggest kick out of it, is I hold some 20-pound monofilament line. I hold it tight, and I'll give a young person, even sometimes the old guys, a scissors, and I say, now just rub back and forth to wear your way through this monofilament line. And then I take out 50 or 65-pound braid. And they'll sit there and go back and forth, wearing on it with the scissors. And, you know, in a few seconds, they wear through the mono. And it splits. I said, yeah, that's about right. Then I take the 50 or 65-pound braid, do the same tension on it, hold it. Now wear through this. Back, forth, through. I go, oh, no, that can't be right. Let's do that again. Braid is so much better than mono. And back, forth, through. I mean, it literally, you go two swipes and it cuts right through it. Where it takes you a few seconds to get through it mono. Now, there's a difference between an eighth of a second and a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get mono on one of these cheap combos, now, mind you, don't misconstrue what I said. Braid is very good and mono is very good, but they are different. It doesn't have to be. In politics, Republicans are bad and Democrats are way worse. You don't have to think of it like that. You can think that, okay, mono does these things really well and braid does these things really well. And one of the things I love about braid is it breaks easy. That's one of the biggest reasons I use it. Mono is very hard to break. Braid is not. So teaching people that they can be different without one being better than the other because they have better, one has better qualities and one has better qualities in something else. But 10-pound test mono or heavier if you're fishing from a pier. 12, 15 is usually a little better. 12 being about the best. You get good casting distance and you still have a lot of power because 12-pound mono breaks at like 16 pounds of pulling pressure. And that's a lot, believe it or not, a real lot. But so you got 10-pound test, 12, maybe 15 on a thing, and you put a little bit of heavier leader on there, tie it on however you can. If you can't tie a good knot, you know what they say, if you can't tie a knot, tie lots. Well, do 15 half hitches on it. It'll get you through the night. Mm-hmm. Get in on whatever you can, and when you get time, stop down to Fish and Frank's, and we'll teach you how to tie a knot. You don't have to buy anything. We will just teach you how to tie the knot. I'm not doing it as a, it's not even a public service. I don't know, but we'll help you out with it. How's that? But get started any way you can. And remember, a little extra lead is better than a little, it's better to have a little more lead than a little not enough. That's the phrase I look for, not enough. Half ounce, 3/4 ounce lead will make most rods very easy to cast. Trying to put a little tiny split shot and a little round bobber on there with a little piece of plastic, there's no weight there, so you go to throw it, it doesn't go anywhere. So you reel it in, and you throw even harder, and it still doesn't go anywhere, so you throw harder, and then it all loops up, knots up, and it's a real problem. To get started, put a half ounce of lead on there. It's not heavy, but it's heavy enough to carry your line out. Now, if you got something with like 20-pound test, you really want an ounce and a half. But we're talking 10 or 12-pound line, and you'll be able to just cast it wonderfully. And then I use an oval bobber if I want to fish under a bobber. There's a lot of very inexpensive ways you can do it. And we sell, and most stores sell, a bobber with a leader under it. Just tie a hook to it, put a piece of shrimp on. Now, you don't have to have live shrimp to do this. A bag of frozen works just fine. All you do is thread the meat onto the hook. Starting at the tail, just put the hook into the tail and thread it on. And what it does is cover the whole hook. But the most important part is a shrimp loses whole outer body once a month or more. The more you feed a shrimp, the faster it grows. It's not, you know, you take a human kid, the more you feed them, the fatter they get, but they're not going to get any taller. But when you take a shrimp, they're not only going to get bigger, they're going to get longer. They're going to get taller. And the more you feed them, the bigger, taller they get. That's why red tide years are so good for shrimp, because all this stuff that's killed by the red tide does not kill shrimp. So they've got tons of food, so they grow bigger, they multiply. Because as soon as they reach a certain size, not so much an age, but a size, they just have 1,000 babies and go on. And then they get bigger and have 1,000 more babies. So when you have red tide, you end up with millions more shrimp than you would on a year without red tide because of all the extra food.
And I think having lots and lots of more shrimp around brings more and more fish in to stay.
That's why Florida has to. FWC, if you're listening, please do the cranial rectumology removal because let's start by closing shrimping on the same months as Texas, Louisiana, and everybody else. So all these out-of-state boats don't come here and rape and pillage our shrimp. Let's just, you know, I hate to say it, follow the trend, but if we're the only place open in the Gulf Coast of Florida, where do all the boats come when everybody else is closed? So, you know, it's actually going to make the shrimping better for our local shrimpers and stuff, so they won't be able to shrimp for 2 or 3 months. But there'll be way more when they do go out to shrimp, and the fish get more food. The reason they started closing it in Texas and the reason Florida does not do it. Now, I love Florida, and I love Governor DeSantis, and if you don't, leave the state. But what happens is they won't pay for someone to go out and sample the shrimp. Now, Texas pays people to go out, pull a net, bring up some shrimp, and they measure them. And once they reach a certain size, after having spawned once, then they say, okay, shrimping's open. You can go out and get what you want because they've guaranteed the next generation. And that's what started it. The fishing was getting really bad in Texas. Everything was slowing down, and fishing is a big industry. $19 billion in Florida alone. But when there's not enough food going out to the fish, they don't necessarily starve to death, but they don't grow well and they don't spawn well. The more you feed shrimp, fish, things like that, the more they grow, the better they spawn, the more they produce. But if you take away a big part of their food from commercial shrimping, you're not going to get that. And I don't care on the Atlantic. Leave it open on the Atlantic forever. Don't care. But on the Gulf Coast, it's an unfair thing to our fish and us. And I don't want to do it to, you know, close it to anybody out of state. Only people from Florida can go shrimping during those months. Because they were going to go anyway. We just don't need all the extra ones. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. We've been talking about this for years, and we haven't gotten any progress on it.
Oh, no.
And it makes perfectly good sense, which means it's not going to happen.
They're worried about hooks.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, let's just let the rape and pillage of our natural resources, because for every pound of fish in the grocery store or shrimp, 15 pounds of marine life have to die. That's not a guess. That's what they say themselves.
Yeah, and they call that bycatch.
Their bycatch or kill is 15 to 1. Now, if I was going out and every time I slaughtered a hog to make bacon and sausage, I had to kill, for every pound of pig, I had to kill 15 rabbits, raccoons, and squirrels, how long would people let that go on?
Yeah, not very.
And that's what it's like. That's what you think about it. For every pound of bacon you get, 15 pounds of rabbits, raccoons, birds, whatever, all had to die. So go to the grocery store and go instead of going to catch it yourself. I love Publix, my favorite place in the world, but this is what they're up against in the seafood markets. I don't like eating seafood out in restaurants. A, I make it better myself. B, it always bothers the back of my conscience. Now, these were not eco-idiots numbers. These come from government and commercial fishery studies, from the commercial fishermen themselves. That's who was part of the study. So if it was just the government telling me that, I wouldn't believe it if it was written in stone next to a burning bush. But this actually came from the industry itself. So anyway, back into the cool part. We were happy before because fishing's really good.
Right. And let's get happy again.
Let's go happy, happy, joy, joy. Dance around the room. Okay. Sharks. A lot of sharks out there. My favorite eating, by the way.
I love shark. Not every one of them, but they're
black tips, Atlantic sharp nose. Oh, man. Now, bonnet sharks, after 35 years of picking dead shrimp out of the bait tanks, and every once in a while you come in and you have this catastrophic night. I remember one night, 7,000 dead shrimp in the tanks. Power had gone off in the middle of the night. Everything died. Walked in the morning. The air conditioner had been off all night. Inside the bait shop, it was probably 105 degrees. 7,000 dead shrimp in the tanks. The shiners were dead. Blue crabs were dead. Minnows were dead. Shrimp was dead. I've got thousands upon thousands of dollars of dead. Can you imagine what that smelled like? You think that would really make you want to go out and eat shrimp for dinner?
You're right.
Yeah. After a few years of that, okay, yeah, I still eat shrimp because I think they're a marvelous creature, but me, not so much. Which means I don't eat bonnet sharks. And it's one of the things that I didn't really care for about nurse sharks. Now, nurse sharks have a more broad-based diet. And by all accountings and rankings, we're number two only to Mako for flavor. But then again, we're talking flavor. So do you like strawberries? I love them. You might hate them. That's the way you look at flavor. I don't know of an unedible shark.
Yeah, really again, it's what flavor do you like? And I don't mind the shrimp flavor, so I'll eat a bonnet shark.
See, you'd be like my dad. My dad loved bonnet sharks, but he loved eating shrimp and, all this other stuff. I don't like lobster. Never developed a taste for it. You know, shrimp I don't mind. It's not like I dislike it. I have a strong dislike for lobster. And so that's what that bonnet shark kind of aftertaste is like for me. It's got a lobster-esque hint.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the black tips, they eat fish, and I like to eat fish. So me and the black tip are on the same page, you know. Am I sorry I took you so I could have a treat? Yeah, but sorry, going to do it again.
Right.
I got one of you. Actually, I've got more than that. I'm
so, somebody asked me the other day about bull sharks. Are bull sharks good to eat?
Yes, but because Florida did such a stupid thing, and it's Florida. If you're going to put a limit on bull sharks, just make a slot limit on some of the smaller ones or something. Because they love slot limits, even though they don't work, and they kill more fish. We have less fish now because of the slot limits than we did before they put the slot limits in. But, you know, 54 inches for a bull shark, when they're 3-4 feet, it's a wonderful meat. But I'm not keeping a 5-6 foot bull shark. That's for a whole picnic. If you're going to have, you know, 20-30 family members over, go out, get yourself a big bull shark, chop them up. Great.
Well, the other thing
for
is
a family barbecue.
The other
That's
thing
like
is
having a hog on the barbecue.
Yeah, the other thing is, do you want a 5 or 6 foot bull shark on the deck with you?
Well, I don't mind that.
Not me, no. I'm sorry, Frank.
It really doesn't bother me. I've done it, you know, so many times.
But the average Joe going out there and catching a bull shark, do you want to really bring a 5 foot bull shark on the boat with you if you don't really know what you're doing? And I think
should you or do you want to?
Well, you shouldn't.
Okay,
you may want to. You may want to, but
you probably shouldn't. But when I was in my 20s and all that, that was just that was the bomb.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry, and I still think young people should be able to do it today. I mean, because if I was letting it go, I honestly don't think it hurt. Whales go up on the beach. They go dig them out, keep them wet, throw them back in the water, and they're fine. And yet they say this is going to kill. No. But, you know, there's a lot of myth, rumor, and whatever. But I love eating sharks. Sharks are a very simple thing if you figure out a few basic rules. And how big a shark should you keep? How big is your cooler? If shark meat gets warm, it's not very good. It gets nasty quick.
It gets milky. If you let it come up to room temperature after the fish has died, when, you know, there's no more circulation, it is
okay,
it gets nasty.
This is Florida. Room temperature be as if you caught it in Pennsylvania.
Right. You're right.
All right. This is Florida. The sun's out. It's 92 degrees. In the sun, it's 113. All right? You, literally, 10, 15 more degrees of heat being in the sunshine. The ones they give you on the radio and TV are temperatures in the shade. It's in the shade, folks. If they give you temperature in the sun, add 13 to 15 degrees. I'm only adding 11 or 12 just to be safe. So you got 100 degrees. The sun is baking this fish. This is not good. So you want to figure out what you can fit in your cooler. Now, in order to catch that shark, I'm going to go back to what I said before. This is a shark that we're going to say is 2 to 3 feet long. And that's plenty of meat for 2 to 4 people. Easy. When you go to catch these, you're going to need at least 10-pound test monofilament, just because if they happen to touch their tail against 6 or 8, 2 times they touch it, they're already through it. The tail's very rough. And they slap that with your tail a couple times. With the 10-pound mono, you probably got 5 or 6 touches before it's going to go through it. But with anything less than that, it's just not fair to the fish. You're too much of a chance of leaving them with a leash on it. You don't need any more pulling pressure with that. We just don't want to leave them running around with a hook and a leader in their mouth. That's not fair to them, not fair to, you know, just a bad thing. But I'm usually using 10, 15, or 20-pound braid. I'm looking for a rod that's usually an 8 to 15, maybe a 6 to 12. If you're actually a pretty good fisherman, 6 to 12 is a lot of fun. If you're pretty inexperienced, you want something a little heavier, like a 10 to 20. But you do not want a shark rod. You do not want a tarpon rod or a grouper rod or any of the things you think you want for these sharks, because it's only a 2.5 foot fish, 3 foot fish. And if you've got 150 yards of line, now you're going to lose most of that probably during the beginning of the fight, but that's why you're out there. And now if you're planning on catch and releasing, they're great catch and release fish, but so how do I catch them? First thing you have to understand is my rule of hooks, bait, fish, and the fish's mouth determines the size bait I can use. The size bait I'm using determines the size of a hook I'm using. If you're out there fishing for a 3 foot black tip or bonnet shark and you've got a baseball sized or half a whole mullet, something like that, and a 10-aught hook or a 14-aught hook because you're shark fishing, you're going to get runs all day long. You're going to have sharks picking that bait up and running with it. You're going to pull back on the hook. You're going to hold it tight, and you're going to lose fish after fish after fish.
Because they never got to the hook.
Never got to the hook. Their mouth isn't big enough so the bait can get in. I'm using half a sardine, which are very soft and mushy baits. And if you don't like sardines because they fall off the hook, get a box of squid with it. Take a box of squid, and when you take a squid out, they're long. They got the legs on one end. Take the head and legs out of the one end, and then cut them sideways. You know, when it's laying down, picture slicing a loaf of bread. But you wanted it about half, three-quarter inch chunks. Now, when you cut that out, you've got a little round circle. It looks like a wide rubber band. Slide that over your sardine, over your half a sardine, and put your hook through. Keep sardine on the hook. It's a great keeper. And having a little extra bait on there is not hurting anything. I don't know. I don't think the squid's actually going to help, but it's not going to hurt. And it keeps your bait on the hook. So now you use sardines, which are beautiful bait, soft, oily, mushy, nasty, everything a fish loves. And I use half at a time. And when I got the head half, I usually use first. Then I'm throwing out the tail half. Now, I'm using about a 4 to 6-aught hook. I'm using 18 inches a leader, maybe. And I'm tying my braid right to it, whether it's 10, 15, 20-pound test braid. The same rods I would use for trout fishing, redfish, or snook, but not big ones, just your average everyday fishing poles. And you hook up, and the fish goes ballistic, jumping and skating across. He's doing 30 miles an hour away from you. It's a riot. Be patient. Have your drag set where you want it. And don't worry if he takes half the spool. That's why you paid for the line. Can I make that any clearer? You bought 150 yards on your reel. I got to have this reel so it holds some line. They pull out 25 yards. You're freaking out because they're taking your line? Get over it. If it ain't past half spool, you're not even getting low yet. All right? Now, if they start running a bit, keep in mind how the old fly fisherman, you're an old fly fisherman, before they had drags on the reel, how did you stop a fish with a fly rod?
With my palm.
You palmed it, right?
Yep.
So if you have a spinning reel, take a clue from the fly fishermen. They weren't all stupid. You could actually put two fingers, the hand that's on the handle, if you're a right-handed person, your left hand should be on the reel. And if you're using your left hand to crank the handle, put your two fingers out, your index finger and your middle finger, and put it on the bottom of the spool. Now, if you're a left-handed person and the rod's in your right hand and you're cranking with your rod's in your left hand because that's your power hand, or if you're one of those ridiculous right-handed person that think you got to throw with your right and reel with your right and do everything, this applies to you idiots as well. See, I'm going to get sued. Now, as you're cranking, and I don't care if you did it all your life, it's wrong. As you're cranking with your right hand, put your thumb out and put it on the top of the spool. This has to do with the spool rotation. They're going around clockwise. I had to actually make the circle here, go to the
I know,
clock.
He looked at the clock before
yes,
he said
I actually
that.
Did. If you, with your left hand, put your thumb on top of the spool, will you get dead? No. Can it split your thumbnail? Yes. Can it jam the knuckles or joints of your thumb? Yes. Are you doing this to get hurt? You shouldn't be. So if you're cranking with your left hand, put two fingers out to the bottom of the spool. That way you're slowing down the rotation, not trying to hold against the rotation. And consequently, if you're reeling with your right hand with a spinning reel, you put your thumb on the top so the spool is sliding under your thumb as you're trying to slow it down. Do not try to readjust your drag knob. It's not a lever drag. Now, Shimano came out with a lever drag spinning reel. It was very cool. It was on the 6500 Bait Runner series years ago. The center knob was the drag, and then they had like a long part of the knob where you could twist it lighter or heavier to give you instant adjustment, but then when you went back to middle, you were right to where you like your perfect drag, but you could loosen it up or tighten it without affecting the main drag setting. That's what's wonderful about lever drag reels. You get your perfect drag weight going on the strike set, and then you can back it off or you can go more than that, but you always come back right where you want to be. Gives you really nice adjustment. That does not happen with a star drag on a bait caster or conventional, and it does not happen with a regular spinning reel. Spinning reels, you crank the drag down, you don't know how much more pressure you just put onto there. Now you're backing it off, now you're too loose, and you go in, you're too tight. You break it off. You can instantaneously add a 16th of a pound of drag by putting your finger against the spool, or 5 more pounds of drag, or 10, or whatever you want, and you can instantly release it, always coming back to the drag setting you liked in the first place.
Right, and putting your hand on the drag in the front, you're reaching your fingers in there as everything's being pulled out, lets you impact the line. You're going to touch the line at some point.
Yeah, that's going to burn. Stay on the skirt of the spool.
Yeah, I was going to say that burns. I mean, so you stay on the skirt of the spool. You don't try to touch the drag. And Frank's right. The slightest little crank under pressure like that is going to be way different than if you were just doing it with your hand with nothing pulling on it.
Well, you know, as a fly fisherman, how easy it is when you're palming a reel to control a bigger fish, because if you feel he's pulling a little too hard for your tippet, you just back off a little bit.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden he's coming around, so now you can palm down on it and really get him to turn. So I do the same thing with a spinning reel. Why would I want to be adjusting a drag knob when I can simply put my fingers up against there, turn a fish? If he's heading up where I need to stop him, he can't go anywhere, I just grab the thing and just lock it up and say, okay, you know, you're either going to break me off under the dock or I'm going to turn you, or I'm going to break the line, one or the other. But it's that time now. Too late to do anything else. Grab it, lock it down. So it's just little tricks that'll get you there. But so I'm using a 4-6 aught hook. I'm using half of a sardine, which is usually about 3 inches by 1 inch tall. In other words, about the same as the mouth of a shark. But because it's so soft, they can easily grab it, and within a chomp chomp, they've got it into their mouth. Whereas if it's any bigger of a bait, they're chawing on it, trying to get this chunk tore off of it so they can swallow it. They're trying to, you know, bite a piece off like you would, you know, bite a piece of pizza off. When you get a piece of pizza, do you stuff the whole thing? Now, this is not for some of you, but most of us don't put the whole piece of pizza in our mouth at one time. You take a bite of it and then another bite of it. Now, if you were a fisherman and you put that hook into the slice of pizza and you had to wait for that fish to get to the correct bite, or would you simply downsize it to bite-sized pieces where when the fish bit on it, you know you're getting a hook? I never had that analogy before. But
that
I'm
works
use
for
that
me. Yeah, no, that really works for me. I can see the hook in the crust of the big piece of pizza, or I can see the hook in the crust of just the piece of crust that you throw out.
So, but, you know, you're biting on this and all that next thing, but you're not getting the hook. But if the bait size will go into the fish's mouth, and then so the mouth and the bait size match together, now you got to put a hook in there, kind of in the Goldilocks thing. You don't want it too small. You don't want it too big. And from experience, depending on the size of the sardines, which is a 4 to 6 aught, and it easily fits the fish. Now, I'm using 30-pound steel leader, and I usually use the red. I think it's more superstitious than it is factual, because you can catch them on black, on silver. I tend to use the red leader because I've been so successful with it, and it's kind of like, I'm not going to change my socks because I've won 5 baseball games in a row, and I'm just going to keep wearing these same socks, and I'm not going to wash them until I win 20 games in a row or something.
Yeah, I have underwear like that for going out on dates.
Yeah,
I'm not going to wash them because I got lucky once 20 years ago.
If you really think not washing your underwear for 15 years is going to get you luckier, I'm like,
well, maybe that explains it, doesn't it?
This could be the reason that streak was so short.
Yeah, I should have rethought that one.
Yeah. Great analogy. I like that one.
Right. All right. Well, we'll go back to the pizza
this
one.
This is why I shouldn't be in business with the public.
Right.
I can't. And I don't know how you do it. You're so, you know, you're so good at talking to people. I'm not. I think because I'm getting older, I'm getting where I really just don't care as much.
Yeah, well, you don't want to know what I'm saying in my head while I'm talking nice to you.
Which one of the voices is talking now?
Right, yeah, exactly, right.
If you only had one voice, I wouldn't be very worried. All right, so hook size, I'm sorry, the fish's mouth size is important. If you're a crappie fisherman and you're using a 6-aught hook, is that going to work? No. Will a number 6 work? Yes. If you're fishing for crappie with a 6-inch shiner, you're probably not going to do very well. I'm trying to get it in terms you guys can figure out. So this is critical. Need to know. Understand how big the mouth of the fish is you're going for. Make sure the bait will go into that fish's mouth. Then match your hook to that bait so it's appropriately sized. Not too small, not too big. You'll figure it out. Now, I got 18 inches, 2 foot of 30 to 60 pound leader. And I'll toss one out. I anchor the boat. I put out a chum bag. I toss a line out with a bobber on it. This bobber only is about whatever I can cast, which is usually between 3 and 4 feet. Throw it out behind the boat, set it in the rod holder, wait to see where the bobber's going, because that'll direct my chum line. Then my next one, it's free line bait out. Now, that's if I've got some current going. If I don't have current, my second line, if let's say I'm in 14 feet of water, my second line has a bobber on it 12 feet above the bait, because I want to be close to the bottom but not on it. So I drop that overboard, leave the bail open until it gets out where I want it, and put it there. The first bobber line only is 3 to 4 feet below because I'm looking for fish cruising near the surface. The second line, which is free line, if I've got current, the water pressure will puff the line up, pick the bait off the bottom, and drop it back down. Kind of like a flag unfurling, but the line does that. But if there's very little current, then I just float it, but I'm putting the bobber up so that the bait's 1 to 2 foot off the bottom. Now I'm going to put a line out for a big fish, and this is going to be half a mullet, a whole ladyfish, a 14-aught hook, 250-pound steel leader, 6 8-ounces of lead, and I'm going to throw that at a 45-degree angle out the back of the boat because I have a bobber line, short bobber. I've got either free line or deep bobber. And now I'm putting the sinker ones out because the sinkers will keep it from going entangling with the rest of them. Now, the sinker line usually has a big bait, big hook, big sinker. And this allows me smaller sharks. And when the small sharks stop biting, get set. Because if you get a good bite and you got some small sharks hitting every few minutes and things are going along and then all of a sudden it all quits, big bad one has just moved in. He's probably minimum 6 foot, but I'd say it's probably an 8 footer come up because the little ones were all feeding and getting real active. And big sharks are the main predator of small sharks. So they would come in to find out what's going on. There's your bait. Get ready for the hookup. So, anyway, in a convoluted way, we found out that stock market and fishing cycles can be very similar. And we found out I'm a whack job that shouldn't belong talking to the general public. RJ's a pretty good guy, but he has very unusual taste when it comes to dating. Come on, I couldn't resist.
You got me, Frank.
And there we are. Stop down the shop. See you sometime. Bye, RJ.
Bye, Frank.